First time for what?
Foreigner.
Jason's classic cut on a Wednesday feels like the first time. One more quick reminder for you folks in Central Wisconsin. I'll be speaking out there tonight at the Holiday Inn, Stevens Point, an AFP event, Americans for Prosperity Wisconsin. It's working. 7 o'clock at the Holiday Inn, 1001 Amber Avenue, Stevens Point. Go 7 to 8:30. You do not have to register. You can just show up, but if you would like to, they appreciate that. You can go to itsworkingwisconsin.com. Itsworkingwisconsin.com. Hope to see you there. Yesterday, the Government Accountability Board issued their rulings and challenges to people who submitted nominating papers, signatures, to be on the ballot for various races. Probably one of the more noteworthy ones, particularly in the Northeast Wisconsin part of the state, but it did get some reporting throughout the state. State Senator Frank Lissay. Democrats targeted him because they were looking for an easy out in trying to get control of the state Senate. They tried to argue that Frank doesn't really live in his district in the De Pere area, but that he lives in, I believe it's Racine. They claim where his wife and children live. He said, no, my kids go to school in De Pere. State Senator Chris Larson, Democrat, when this was going on, well, I think we've got a case here. I think we're going to get him off the ballot. I really think that's going to happen. Well, the Government Accountability Board unanimously dismissed this as frivolous, which it was. As Frank said, look, my kids go to school up here. Here's what Chris Larson was saying. Yeah, now he was very confident, he claimed. Very confident that this challenge would happen and Frank would be booted off the ballot because he doesn't really live in his Senate district that he represents. What did he say yesterday? Democrats weren't surprised by the ruling, said Senator Chris Larson, Milwaukee Democrat. He said he believes the board neglected to address the question of Lissay's residency head-on. The Government Accountability Board tends to err on the side of allowing people to have ballot access, even if they don't live in the district. No, they called it frivolous. He's out and out lying there. They want to raise this specter, even though they couldn't get him booted off the ballot. It was a desperate act and failed miserably. By the way, he's being challenged by an Ashwaubenon special education teacher who lives in De Pere. Lissay was the only incumbent senator facing a challenge to his nomination. He actually, I don't know if the government, I don't know if they called it frivolous. Frank called it frivolous, but they didn't take it seriously. And they unanimously rejected it. I thought I saw somewhere where they did, but I may be wrong on that. Da, 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 da. Now, here's someone else who got to stay on the ballot, but it appears they did not. I need to correct that. They didn't characterize it that way, but they summarily rejected it. Here is someone else who got on the ballot. Brett Halsey, as a Democrat, challenging Mary Burke. Now, you can debate how big a deal this is. Obviously, he's not a serious challenger. However, it was Democrats who tried to keep him off the ballot. It was Democrats who challenged his nominating papers. He didn't have much over the minimum needed. I thought for sure they were going to find enough to disqualify him. They did not. Now, what this means is he can keep reminding the liberal base of how disappointed they are in Mary Burke. They're not going to, I mean, he's not a legitimate challenger, but he can keep reminding the liberal base that, yeah, you know, she's kind of a liberal female Mitt Romney, isn't she? which is what liberals have said about her. And now he can have someone show up at all of her events in a chicken suit and calling her a chicken for not debating him. He can be a pain in the butt. I said you would be able to measure how much a pain in the butt Democrats and Mary Burke felt he was based on, well, how did they react to him? Their reaction was to try to keep him off the ballot. They failed. Now the next measure will be, will they have the discipline, and that's what it's going to take, will they have the discipline to ignore him? If they don't ignore him, then you'll know, boy, they're really annoyed. He went through the trouble of getting on the ballot, so that tells me he plans on using this as self-promotion, publicity stunt, and making mischief. Now, in terms of should we vote for him in the primary, there is a... Yeah, let me think about that. There's not a Republican Attorney General primary. There are primaries around the state, though, for various offices. For example, in eastern Wisconsin, you have the 6th Congressional District. I'm not a big believer in that, and that to me is not much of a benefit here. You're not going to get Brett Halsey on the ballot. Trust me on that one. That's not going to happen. But let's see how much of an annoyance it is. There's also a felon on the ballot in August. Felon and former state senator Gary George will mount his challenge to U.S. Representative Gwen Moore, which is seen as a long shot. The State Elections Board also unanimously rejected that challenge to his signatures. And that allows him to challenge fellow Democrat Moore. This is from Jason Stein in the Journal Sentinel. Milwaukee Union official Sheila Cochran had challenged hundreds of the signatures George submitted on his nomination papers, saying they were collected by convicted felons, among other problems, board staff said. However, that those signatures had to be accepted under state law because the felons had already completed their probation and other aspects of their sentence. A lot of people don't understand that. The ban on felons being involved in politics in this way is only if they are still under any type of supervision by the state. If they're not, the felony conviction doesn't mean anything. A lot of people do not understand that. George was recalled from his Senate post back in October of 2003. He was later indicted on 2 counts of defrauding the government and accepting kickbacks. He was convicted in 2004 of 1 felony count. And he, too, is no longer under state supervision, so he can run. As you know, there was another school shooting. I'm sure you know. There was another school shooting in Oregon. A teen gunman armed with a rifle shot and killed a student Tuesday and injured a teacher before he likely killed himself at a high school in a quiet Columbia River town in Oregon. This immediately prompted the usual outrage from President Obama. While the president said he had undertaken several executive actions to tighten existing regulations, the failure by Congress to require a background check for buyers of guns left the nation vulnerable to an unending series of mass shootings. The bottom line is we don't have enough tools right now to really make a big dent as we need to, Mr. Obama said to a young audience. Really? How would that have stopped this shooting? Mr. Obama said that passing federal legislation would require a shift in public opinion big enough to move Congress. This is from the New York Times, by the way, where he said most members are terrified of the NRA. Until that changes, until there's a fundamental shift in public opinion in which people say, enough, this is not acceptable, this is not normal, this isn't sort of the price we should be paying for our freedom. What the hell does that mean? What does that mean? This isn't the price we should be paying for our freedom. So in other words, was that a Freudian slip? That yes, there's too much freedom under the Second Amendment? It almost sounds that way. The president expressed little hope for a change in sentiment, noting that even his push for background checks for would-be gun buyers fell short. The fact that 26-year-olds were gunned down in the most violent fashion possible, he's talking about Newtown, and this town, that would be Washington, couldn't do anything about it was stunning to me. No, it wouldn't have done anything. Mr. Obama had used some of the strongest language of his presidency in addressing the issue of gun violence, although he had remained quiet during the recent spate of shootings until Tuesday. The country has to do some soul searching about this, he said. This is becoming the norm, and we take it for granted in ways that, as a parent, are terrifying to me. The nation, he said, should be ashamed of its inability to pass even mild restrictions, referring to those who argue that gun violence is caused by untreated mental illness rather than lax gun laws. Mr. Obama said, you know, the United States does not have a monopoly on crazy people. It's not the only country that has psychosis, he added. And yet we kill each other in these mass shootings at rates that are exponentially higher than any place else. Well, what's the difference? The difference is these guys can stack up a bunch of ammunition in their houses. So he finally said it out loud. He finally said it out loud. We can't stop crazy people, so we have to stop guns. No. America doesn't have a monopoly on psychoses and mental illness, but we seem to have a better supply than other countries. Here's the complete fallacy in his logic here. These crazy people could always get guns. Why are crazy people acting out now more than before? They could always get guns. Gun laws hasn't suddenly gotten easier. So there is a variable here, and it's not access to guns. We didn't suddenly make guns more accessible. People with mental health issues could have always gotten them. So why are people with mental health issues acting out more now? That's the complete mythology here. This is the most honest that he or any liberal has been about this. Look, we just got to take guns. Then he goes back to the default, well, even modest gun regulation. That's not what he means. He's saying two things here. He talks about what he considers modest gun restrictions, but then what he's referring to is, well, crazy people get access to guns. It is doublespeak, both sides of his mouth. Yes, who would have ever thought it? Good point, Jason. Guns have always been here. The mentally disturbed using them to act out is growing. And we have seen in recent months, when the mentally disturbed can't find guns, they use knives. Yes, untreated mental illness is the bigger of the two problems here. Were it not the growing problem, the shootings wouldn't be growing, because gun access has always been there. What is the, if you'll pardon the expression, what is the moving target here? Why? Why are more people acting out with guns? It's not because they can get guns where they couldn't used to. It's because there are more mentally ill people acting out. Why? And the only way, and this is the lie to what he's saying, the only way that you're ever going to end this, the way he wants to end it, is take all guns. Because no background checks are going to keep a crazy person from doing this if they haven't been diagnosed. It's 1021.
Jerry Bader Show.